Welcome to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. I'm Matt Vinatieri, former NFL scout and now of Sports Info Solutions, joined by Aaron Schatz, the godfather of football analytics and the founder of Football Outsiders. As always, we've got our producer, Justin Stein, with us. And today we have a little bit of a special. We're going to go off the beaten path a little bit and talk about the history of DVOA. So instead of being caught up in the day-to-day operations of the off-season or non-off-season or whatever we have now, this is really about going back to the beginning of DVOA, what inspired the creation of the stat, how it's changed over time, and where it's at now. So I mentioned him already, the godfather, the founder of Football Outsiders, and of course the founder of DVOA itself. Aaron, are you ready to talk some DVOA?
Yeah, this is my episode, I guess. It's sort of a this is your life. But I hopefully, for people who listen to the podcast regularly and hear us quote this metric, you know, as the main metric we use at Football Outsiders to rank teams all the time, will hear and understand sort of where it comes from and where it's going and what it's good for and how it works.
All right. So let's start at the top. Let's go back in time about 20 years or so. You had a completely different life and career before Football Outsiders. So what inspired you to start looking into football statistics on a deeper level and kind of led you towards this path?
So for people who don't know my origin story, I told the story in a lot of places, but I was basically just a fan. I was a longtime Bill James reader, and it was weird to me that nobody was really doing football analytics. Remember, in 2002, there was nobody doing football analytics. There was Ron Borges, wrote for the Boston Globe at the time, was writing about the Patriots and the idea that they didn't make the playoffs because they couldn't establish the run. And that didn't sound right to me. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to do some research and figure out whether teams that run more early in games really do win more games. And that involved a lot of cutting and pasting of all of the play-by-play of 2002 into a workbook. And once I had done that, I had this workbook with every play from the 2002 season. And there actually were, I just said nobody was doing football analytics before Football Outsiders. There were a couple of people. And one was that there were these two guys who wrote a book that was contracted with the Baseball Prospectus Group. They wrote a football prospectus book. And they talk about in the 2001 and 2002 books that they had this database of play-by-play, but none of the stats that they created actually differentiated between any plays in any way that demonstrated that they actually had a database of play-by-play. So I'm like, well, shoot, now I actually have a database of play-by-play. Let's do some stuff with it. And that's sort of where the idea started.
That's awesome. I remember, what was it, the Greatest Show on Turf right around a couple years before then. Me as a kid learning that, oh, if they gave Marshall Faulk the ball 25 times a game, that they were going to win, you know, they were 11-0 that year. So just give Marshall Faulk the ball, right? But you were quick to debunk that. You got into the whole thing. You started playing around with the database. How'd you come to the realization that you wanted to create a stat like DVOA?
Well, it started with this book called The Hidden Game of Football. So if people have never read The Hidden Game of Football, it is really seminal work in the idea of football analytics. So much of what we've done in the 20 years since then comes from that. The writers were Pete Palmer and John Thorne, who were better known as baseball guys, and then Bob Carroll, who was the leader of the Pro Football Research Association. So they wrote this book, and one of the ideas that they introduced in the book was the idea of success points, which was that you would assign points to each play based on how successful it was, based on the down and distance. So this was the first time I had ever heard of the idea of a success rate where different down and distances were judged differently. So, you know, the idea of thinking about things with situational football, which is how coaches think. So the basic success rate was 40% of needed yards on first down, 60% on second, 100% on third. We've changed it a little bit since then. We use 45% on first down, but that was the basic thing that they did. And then they gave extra points for plays that were 10 yards or 20 yards and -4 for a turnover or something. So once I had this database of all the plays from 2002, what I did was I'm like, oh, well, I wonder how each team did in the success points and how each player did in success points. So I created a thing that multiplied all the success, you know, added together all the success points for every play to figure out which players did best or worst. Now, the problem with that is that what it came out with was that Mike Allstott was the best running back in the league in 2002. And that's where the average part of DVOA being defense adjusted value over average came in.
How did he mess up the system, and how did he you fix it based on that?
Because Mike Allstott was likely to get the ball in situations where success was more likely, right? He mostly got the ball in short yardage situations where it was easier to get success points. When you're just adding up success points, there's nothing about how hard it is to get success points in a certain situation. So since he was getting a lot of first downs and touchdowns on, you know, second and ones and third and ones,
right,
he came out as the most successful player. So I'm like, oh, okay, I need to compare the success that each player gets on each play to an average of how successful plays are from that location on the field and that down and distance. And so that became value over average. And so when I did that, I ended up with Priest Holmes as the best running back of 2002, which seemed a lot more accurate.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And definitely the way things have gone, like you said, over the last 20 years, much more towards looking at things in the context of average or replacement, which aren't really that different as far as concepts go.
Right. Replacement is just lower. And I mean, you know, we can argue about different groups use replacement level in different ways. Like my definition of replacement level is more what's an average backup like. Other groups might do replacement level as what's the average like signing off the street in the middle of the season, like practice squad player is replacement level. But the idea of value over replacement level and the idea of value over average is all basically the same idea. It's just what's the level that you're comparing to.
Right. Quick divergence. Even in baseball, where they've had this idea going back even further, and Baseball Reference and Fangraphs have even kind of agreed on what the definition of replacement level is. I know Bill James is doing a lot of work right now that's going back and kind of debunking the old definition of replacement level. So it's kind of an ongoing conversation. Okay, so you split that out. I had one question. So at the time, you must have been looking at kind of a limited database. How did you deal with down distance yard line situations that didn't happen very often? How'd you look at those in terms of a comparison to average?
Yeah, I mostly created curves and bins. You know, I mean, like I've been like everything fourth and 15 and up got binned, you know, third and fourth downs were compared, you know, would be combined. And then for the like smaller yardages where there were more fourth down plays, I would do like separate third and fourth down baselines for like and one and two. But then when you got to stuff like fourth and 10 or fourth and 11, I would use like the same baseline as third, 10, third and 11. As time went on and I did different versions of DVOA, I would have more and more data to use as to create the baseline. So I was able to do baselines that were more and more separated out because I would have more and more data to use. But yeah, at the beginning, the first time I ever created this, it was only based on 2002, one season.
Right. So you're going to have limitations there, but it makes sense the way you approach it because third and 10 and third and 11 are not nearly as different as third and one and third and two are. So it makes sense. Okay. So what was the process? You know, we kind of talked about it a little bit there, but in terms of conceptualizing DVOA, it sounds like you started with the hitting game of football and then you kind of worked through there. You talked about this one sort of iteration that you went through. Were there any other iterations that you went through before you kind of arrived on that construction, that VOA/DVOA? Sort of construction of things?
Yeah, I mean, the next big step was the adding the D to DVOA, right? Was doing adjustments based on schedule. And that came to me pretty quickly because I realized every team in the NFL plays a different schedule. And this was a bigger deal at the time than it is now. Now, only two games on your schedule are decided by what place you were in the standings the year before. But I believe that prior to 2002, it was like four games in the schedule that were...
Before the division realignment, I think you got four games based on the schedule of the... Yeah.
So I had that on my mind, even though by the time I actually created this, we were into the modern eight division, four team setup. Like when I created DVOA in 2002, it was the first season of the Houston Texans. So
You still have different divisions that people are in and all that kind of stuff.
Right, and teams play different divisions. And if you play the NFC West when it was like horrible in the mid-2000s, you had an easier schedule. So like it was clear to me that I needed to do some sort of schedule adjustment, that was something that was really missing from football stats as they currently existed in 2002. So, you know, that was the big conception, the next big step in the conception. And then I would say the step after that was probably creating the special teams ratings, which we launched Football Outsiders in July of 2003. There were no special teams ratings. So the first like 7 or 8 weeks that I ever published DVOA, there is no special teams. And it was because of Dante Hall that I realized that I needed to do some kind of special teams rating. So during the year, I created a special teams rating that was basically based on expected points and expected how often field goals went in from different distances. And it's basically the same way I do special teams now, except the difference being mainly, you know, having more data to use as my baseline.
We had a similar process with total points. Offense and defense came first and then special teams after. They're just different sorts of questions that you have to answer there. And I know even now today you've talked about in the past how your season projections, your win total projections for each teams, they barely use the special team stuff at all because that's so.
Right. I think like every team's special teams projection for next year is between -2 and -2, except for Baltimore, which is 3. So you don't project like special teams is projected pretty close to zero. But what's interesting is the reason why I didn't do special teams originally was because it was all based on success points, and Hidden Game didn't give any kind of formula for success points for special teams plays. So I had to think of it in a new way. And the way I thought of it was actually using expected points added way back in the dark ages. That's sort of where the special teams ideas come from.
So it sounds like it makes a lot of logical sense. You kind of started off with the statistics as they were, then started looking them in terms of the Hidden Game of football, then adding in the over average component and then the defense adjustments. And that was kind of how you built DVOA. Are there other key decisions that went into that construction, or are there any decisions that you go back to and think about, if I had done that differently, that would have changed the story that kind of DVOA has told over time?
Yeah, well, I think one of the key decisions I made was when I created a curve of partial success points, because the original success rate idea is basically, you know, first down for 40% of needed yards on first down gets you 1 point, and not getting 40% of needed yards on first down gets you no points, right? So what I realized was there needed to be some sort of partial points, right? Like the difference between getting, I mean, now that I do 45% on first down, it's 5 yards gets 1 point. The difference between getting 5 yards on a first and 10 and getting 4 yards on a first and 10 is not the same as the difference between getting 5 yards and getting 0 or negative play. So what I did was I created these sort of curves that you get additional success points for every yard as you get closer to what the success, you know, the marker for success is. And then it jumps to a full success point at that point. And then you start getting like additional, it's not all of a sudden it's 1 for 5 yards and 2 for 10 yards. It becomes like, you know, 1.2 for 6 and 1.4 for 7 and 1.6 for 8. Like I made them curves. They're not, it's not necessarily linear, but I basically created these curves of partial success points, and the same with losses. And that I think helped make it more accurate.
That makes a ton of sense. Sorry, but if you think about the way most stats work today, which are non-DVOA, which are either kind of EPA-based, which is just all volume, or it can be success rate-based, which you lose all of that sort of fidelity there. This is kind of an in-between route, right? This is based in the success rate, but it allows you to kind of modulate it appropriately for the explosive plays in one direction or another.
And it's funny because you ask me about if I had done certain things differently. And one of the things I wonder about a lot is what would have happened if instead of basing DVOA on this success points formula, I had actually based it on EPA from the very beginning. Like, I could have built a DVOA where, like, what's the EPA of this play? What's the average EPA of plays at this point in the field on first and 10? And compared it that way. Like, and that would have been the over average comparison. And I wonder how different it would look. Now, there are certain things, for example, about EPA that DVOA does differently. For example, DVOA starts to sort of stunt the value of plays once you get over about 40 yards. Because once you get over about 40 yards, the length of a play is much more about where you started on the field rather than where there's not that much difference. If you're on the 40, there's not that much difference between a 40-yard touchdown and an 80-yard touchdown. Often the difference is you either started on the 40 and then you hit the end zone, or you started on the minus 20 and then you hit the end zone. Like, so there's actually, like, EPA, I think, tends to, at least for a predictive value, tends to overrate some of those long plays. That being said, I think that there's a possibility that there are certain teams in history that have specialized in those kinds of deep plays that DVOA might be underrating a little bit, namely the 1998 Minnesota Vikings, because of the fact that I do blunt the strength of those really deep, long plays. But, you know, you make the decisions when you have a system like this. You make the decision about what's going to get you the most accurate ratings over like 20, 30 years, not for just one team. So it's like I don't build the system to make one team look better. But it just so happens that it ends up where the 98 Vikings are a team that I think that I probably have a little bit underrated by my system. I think the other big decision was the push and pull between making it a predictive system and making it a descriptive system. And I mean, I've definitely read people who say that one of the great sins of statistics is to not separate fully between a predictive system and a descriptive system. And I commit that sin, right? DVOA is sort of halfway between predictive and descriptive. There's certain elements of it that are meant to filter out the effects of luck. And there's other elements that fully measure things that we know are not necessarily as predictive. The way I think about it is, I'm trying not necessarily to predict the future or describe the past directly, but I think of it as in terms of if you could come up with a number that represented the platonic ideal of how good a team was in a particular game or a particular season, like if you could just like magically see the number above the heads of the players that said, this is how good this team is, like what would that look like? Like, even though we know that how good that team is in the red zone is not necessarily as indicative of how good they'll be next year, or, you know, the field goal percentage, for example, I include field goal percentage in the special teams rating, but field goal percentage is really inconsistent over time. Like, if I wanted to have a purely predictive DVOA, I would probably de-emphasize red zone performance. I would de-emphasize things like field goals and the special teams formula. But if I wanted a purely descriptive DVOA, I would, for example, not treat all fumbles equal no matter who recovered them. So, and I wouldn't necessarily do some of the other adjustments that are in there. So what I end up with is this sort of middle ground between predictive and descriptive.
I really think of it as descriptive plus, because I think, like you're saying, like there are aspects of it that make it more predictive than a purely descriptive stat. But really what you're doing is it's kind of like you're parsing out BABIP and you're looking at just FIP. You're looking at like, okay, this is the stuff that maybe it's not all within the control, but this is the stuff that actually reflects how well they played. And let's take away the stuff that reflects the way the ball bounced. And so it makes sense to me. Those are really fascinating answers. Thank you for that.
When I correlate, like when I test it, What I've tried to do when I've like done big overhauls in the past is try to balance the correlation of DVOA to DVOA in the future and the correlation of VOA, right, which is, you know, not including opponent adjustments, to wins. And what I try to do is come up with a balance of improving both of those correlations. So it's sort of, that's where you get the idea of sort of halfway between predictive and descriptive.
So that's a great segue into the next question I was going to ask, which is how has DVOA changed over time?
So I don't have a list somewhere of each version and what I changed in each version. Obviously, one of the big differences was as I got more and more data, the baseline was based on more and more years. We changed the opponent adjustments at some point to be more rigorous by going through multiple iterations, right? It used to be where it was like your offense, the adjustment for what defenses you played was just based on how good those defenses are. Now it's like you're actually adjusting the offenses are against the offenses. A big difference that was added in, I think the last time I did a big overhaul, was normalizing every year to zero. So now you can compare year to year much better by, because I was getting to a point where it was like the average was no longer zero. Like the average would be like four because offensive levels kept going up.
Quarterback rating inflation.
Yeah, part of the reason why I feel like DVOA is really easy to understand is because the average is zero. Adding that normalization in so every year averages to zero, I mean, based on the sort of historical baselines, like the average DVOA last year should be like 10. Like that's how big offenses are now compared to history.
That explains why 4 yards used to be positive and now it's five.
Yeah, that's probably true too. I've added in the last version, there are more adjustments for the fourth quarter for like teams running out the fourth quarter. It's easier to pass in the fourth quarter if you're losing.
Just garbage time stuff.
Yeah. There's adjustments for dome stadiums. I never quite figured out how to get in adjustments for like warm weather versus cold weather, but I did get in adjustments that it adjusts offenses down if they're in domes. And of course, one of the big changes was all fumbles being equal. The idea that fumble recovery is inherently random. Fumbles are penalized by the likelihood that a fumble of that type is recovered by the offense. So like aborted snaps are penalized less than like if you fumble the ball downfield on a reception, because a ball fumbled downfield on a reception is more likely to be recovered by the defense. I also put in something at one point that adjusted interceptions based not just on the fact that it's just an interception is always like -6, but that it's adjusted for how deep the interception is, with the idea that if you put in the variables of what's the line of scrimmage and what's the place where the interception is caught, you can get an average return on that interception. And returns, I don't want to blame the offense for how long a return is on an interception, because they're not out there being trained to tackle correctly. But obviously, if you throw an interception that's caught at the line of scrimmage, it's more likely to go for a big return than if you launch the ball 40 yards downfield on a 3rd and 10. So like now, like those 40-yard, you know, arm punts are penalized much less than like throwing it into the hands of a defensive lineman.
So is that even if you threw the ball into the hands of the defensive lineman, one guy, you know, you do two plays like that. One guy catches it at the line of scrimmage and falls down. The other guy catches it and returns it for a touchdown. Those would be treated the same way because they were both at the line of scrimmage where the interception point occurred?
Yeah. Although it's penalized more if you're backed up in your own end and you do that than if you're like at midfield and you do that. Because if you're backed up in your own end and you throw it right to a defensive lineman, it's more likely that they're going to get a touchdown.
Right. So you got the field position incorporated too. Very cool. Okay. And then I wanted to ask just a little bit deeper about how DVOA works in its present form. And kind of what I mean by that is how are you treating offense and defense totally equally? Like, is a plus 10 for the offense going to be a negative 10 for the defense always? And then what about different positions? Like how are receivers and passing plays treated differently than running plays?
Well, in the team DVOA, all plays go in together. So run and pass are included together, because the way I think of it is that a team has an option to run or pass. So just because runs are less efficient than passes, like I want to show that teams that pass more often should have a higher rating because passing is more efficient than running. So
they're choosing to have a higher rating.
Right, is the average for passes is actually like 8 or 9, and the average for runs is actually like -8 or -9. Now, offense and defense are different because there are certain plays that qualify for offense but not for defense. First of all, in the last version, I introduced some penalties. For example, we added in defensive pass interference games. That counts for both sides. But I also added in false starts and delay of game, but those are only penalized for the offense. And then aborted snaps are only penalized for the offense. I don't give a defense credit just because the offense blew a handoff. And then the other thing is the position DVOAs are based on completely different baselines. For every type, rushing is a different baseline, passing is a different baseline, receiving is a different baseline. When I'm talking about quarterback passing for a position, basically I'm only comparing like to like. So while pass DVOA for a team has an average that's like 8 or 9% because I'm comparing it to all plays, pass DVOA for a quarterback has an average of 0 because I'm only comparing it to other quarterbacks passing the ball. That has led to sort of some interesting results compared to EPA. Because here's an interesting thing, is that runs by quarterback are only compared to other runs by quarterbacks. And we know that runs by quarterback are inherently very positive EPA plays. I mean, first of all, they tend to gain a lot of yards. Second of all the negative ones mostly don't count. Like, unless it's a designed run, a negative quote-unquote quarterback run is a sack, so that counts as a passing play rather than a running play. So runs tend to be really EPA positive. What that means is that our stats tend to rank running quarterbacks lower than something like ESPN's QBR, because ESPN's QBR accounts for just how much value those running quarterbacks bring in over other plays. But we're only comparing the running quarterbacks to other running quarterbacks. So like what Lamar Jackson did last year, if you compare it to like other quarterbacks running on the same number of plays, is less impressive than if you compare what Lamar Jackson did last year to all other plays total. And so, I mean, there's positives and negatives about doing it that way. But I do it that way, and that does lead to the fact that like a player like Lamar Jackson, his run DYAR will not be as impressive as like the pass DYAR will be for like Peyton Manning.
But and then also his rushing stuff is going to affect the team DVOA more than it would affect his own.
In some ways, yeah.
So is that, and I think that's actually appropriate. I think total points works certainly differently than DVOA.
Right. My guess is total points is more like an EPA thing where quarterbacks get more points when they run well, because if you compare them to a handoff to a running back, quarterback runs tend to be much more efficient plays.
Yeah, but it's funny because our final results tend to be a little bit more like yours in that we never have the Josh Allens and Mitchell Trubisky's performing very well like QBR does, just because they're running a lot of the time. So I want to look a little bit deeper into that. I do think it's appropriate. Like, your team was good. You won games because the guy ran for first downs. But when you're kind of looking at how good your passing game was, or how good
the quarterback is, QBR gets a little bit too far on this. If you look at Mitchell Trubisky's QBR for 2018, it's a little nuts.
Yeah.
Like, his QBR is really high just because of running. So is Daniel Jones's QBR for his first game or two last year was like top of the league simply because of running the ball.
Right. And in defense of QBR, it is valuable for your team. So I like the way you handle that, though, the difference on the
But team. I don't think it means Mitchell Trubisky was the third best quarterback of 2018 or whatever they haven't ranked at.
I don't think if we talked to Brian Burke, I don't think he would say that. And that's important, too, because I think that kind of ties into what you were saying a little bit before. Like, there are things that because of decisions you make, that one statistic can tell you, and specifically that it can't tell you. And you make these decisions for reasons, and then you kind of have to go with them because you can't make all the decisions at the same time. So in light of that, I wanted to ask you, what are some of the strengths of DVOA? Like, what can DVOA tell us? And then kind of juxtapose that with what its weaknesses are, what it can't tell us.
I mean, I think it is a very predictive stat. It's certainly more predictive of how well teams are going to play in the future than the standard numbers or just wins. And it does accounting for the schedule is a strong addition. to it. I really love using it historically. I think it's great for comparing teams across seasons. I love doing the historical stuff, like, you know, what are the top 10 seasons by Green Bay over the last 35 years or whatever. You learn things like, I mean, I was just looking yesterday and I learned, do you really, the new Cleveland Browns in their 21 years of history have been above average in offense once. And the second and third best offenses in 21 years are the Baker Mayfield offenses. Like, even though we think of last year as such a disappointment, that's the third best offense that the Cleveland Browns have had in 21 years.
And that's relative to the year, right? That's not just in 2019 inflation. You're saying,
right, it's based, yeah, compared to the average offense of 2019. Right, because my guess is if you look at inflation, the 2019 offense was probably better than the 2007 offense. But if you look at compared to the average of that year, the 2007 offense is the only positive year that Cleveland has. But I love doing that historical stuff.
What year is that 2007 year? What offense?
That's the Derek Anderson Pro Bowl year, the year that Charlie Fry started the opening game, and they pulled him in the middle for Derek Anderson, and then Anderson started the rest of the season and made the Pro Bowl.
We shouldn't tell any Tennessee Titans fans about Derek Anderson and what happened after that, right?
I guess having the starter pulled and having a really good season doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be good for the rest of time, does it? And I mean, it's definitely a predictive stat. It's definitely useful for predicting the future. I think it's a good measure of players in some ways. I think it's good for measuring, often good for comparing players on the same team. Although, you know, it has some problems with receiving. We can talk about, you know, that too.
Yeah. What are some of the problems that you think exist with it?
I mean, the biggest problem with it is that there's no player separation, right? Like, I fully admit that, like, for example, the team ratings are going to be more accurate than player ratings because there's nothing that I do that is, you know, let's try to separate the quarterback from the receivers. And so it's tough because I think our receiving stuff, I am trying to figure out a way to account for the fact that there should be some value in just getting targets. But there also needs to be receivers need to be penalized when they have bad catch rates and for incompletes because it means they're not getting open. It doesn't just mean the quarterback's not finding them. But there also needs to be some sort of accounting for the fact that there is value in getting targets. And I think sometimes we have high target receivers too low. And sometimes, like, you compare two receivers on the same team and the higher target receiver will have a lower DVOA. It's not necessarily because he was covered better. It just could be just because that's where the quarterback goes when nothing's open.
Well, I find it valuable to look at DYAR alongside DVOA kind of for that reason.
I think even there, I need to figure out a way to give some credit for the inherent value of targets without, like, making all incompletes, like, not like only using complete passes, period. Like, there needs to be some value for the inherent value of targets. Cause, like, we have DeAndre Hopkins with the 31st best DVOA last year and the 17th best DYAR, and he was more valuable than that.
It's interesting. It actually sounds like it might be a situation where using a replacement level,
a lower replacement level, might actually be better. Yeah,
that might solve that problem. Or there are definitely other ways that you could do it too. So that'll be interesting, and that's good because I was going to ask you where you see DVOA going in the future. So it sounds like that's one thing that you have your eyes on. Do you have other plans for the future of DVOA?
Well, there's a couple of big changes. The first is there actually is a new version that I'm planning to come out with, but we want to be able to, like, fully test it and do all the historical years. So it's probably not coming out until it's not going to be in this year's Football Outsiders Almanac, but it's going to change. Here's the tough thing. It's going to change scrambles so they count as pass plays rather than run plays when we separate out pass and run for teams. Unfortunately, I can't do the work yet to count scrambles as runs for quarterbacks because runs and passes for quarterbacks are done completely differently. I would have to, like, completely overhaul the way I do quarterbacks. But it's a lot easier to do for teams since we compare all plays to all plays. So the new version will have scrambles will count as passes, which unfortunately means for years prior to 2005, I'm going to have to, years prior to 2006, I'm going to have to sort of make up what's a scramble. Like, I'm just going to have to basically assume that any positive run that's not on like a sneak situation is a scramble, because it doesn't mark when, you know, for 1988, it doesn't mark what's a scramble and what's a run. The other thing is it's going to fix some things to make for better adjustments for the fourth quarter and for domes. The other thing we're working on is being able to have live updated DVOA that reads straight from the feeds of the games. So you'll be able to see on our site the DVOA of a game during a game. Like, we won't be able to renormalize the whole league after every play. So like, we'll still have to renormalize each season once the week is over. But like, you'll be able to see in game, like, what each team DVOA is based on the normalizations up till that week and based on the opponent adjustments up through that week. And we'll be able to update it with every play. So we're working on that. And, you know, other things I want to look at more in the future, you know, special teams, updating the special teams a little bit, more fourth quarter adjustments, possibly working on the idea of offense being more predictive than defense. Do we need a purely predictive DVOA that rates offense more than defense? There's like, I have a lot of ideas and not enough time to get into them.
I can't wait to see where it goes in the future. I've been tracking it since the beginning. And it's fun to get to talk to you about it. This has been about as much fun as I think I've ever had doing a podcast episode with you. So thank you for taking us kind of behind the curtains there. And to all of our listeners, as usual, thank you for listening. You are what keeps us going. You can catch more of us on Twitter. You can catch Aaron at FO_A Shots or at FB Outsiders. We're at SportsInfo_SIS. I'm at Matt Mano. And you can also check out SIS on YouTube. Nate Cooper's been doing draft recaps for each division one by one, so you can check that out on the Sports Info Solutions YouTube channel. We're also recruiting 2020 football video scouts. If you're interested in applying, head to the career section of our website, sportsinfosolutions.com. And of course, the Football Outsiders Almanac, featuring all kinds of DVOA analysis and more, will be out in July of this year. So Aaron is already, I know, poring over that and getting into the details.
We are in depth, man. I got my first chapter in yesterday, so we're in the thick of it.
Cannot wait. For my co-host Aaron Schatz and our producer Justin Stein, I'm Matt Manicharian, and thank you for joining us for the latest episode of the Off the Charts Football Podcast.